You know, I seen a bit of violence perpetrated at a real young age from old man to my old lady. Sexual abuse within the whānau is quite rife here. Murder suicide is really high here.
I was an active member for a little over 12 to 13 years. I went deep enough to become institutionalized, you know, prone to violence.
Yeah, all up around just under 15 years, bro. I just got out in August of last year, trying to rebuild ourselves. Me and the bro got together, started running our own workshop up there and talking about those and, yeah, in a safe environment. And, yeah, that's how this come about.
Young soldier of God, steady march.
Ko ai au, ko Regan Wurimu Hā Te Rangi Kā Tuari Tuku Ingoa. I was born in Gisborne, from Gisborne. My whānau's from Tolaga Bay, Rangitukia, Te Aroro.
Kia ora whānau, James Aston Nielsen, 30 years old. Come from the coast here, Uawa, Te Aroro, and I was raised in town.
In the inception of this kaupapa, we had both just recently got out of prison, got out of the system, trying to rebuild ourselves, trying to find answers to some of the questions that we didn't know answers to. We attended a couple classes with some of the local rōpūs around, and then there was a problem in our little communities up the coast here. So me and the bro got together, powwowed with a couple of the bros in town, and then reached out to some whānau, Uncle Kiriama Blackman, my Auntie Kelly Blackman, and got the Surf Life Saving Club up in Tolaga Bay, and then started running our own workshop up there and just opening up a safe place for, you know, other brothers and whānau to come and just talk about some of the more hassling things that maybe they don't want to talk about with their whānau, and, yeah, and just trying our best with the experience and the life decisions and some of the mistakes and some of the things we've learnt, and talking about those and, yeah, in a safe environment. And, yeah, that's how this come about. And we've been doing it roughly for about 1.5 months now. It's been mecca, bro. Honestly, it really has. It's been really rewarding. We've been doing some volunteer work with Red Cross and some of the local iwi, going out and playing ball with kids and all the youth, and just, yeah, really trying new things, really, bro. It's something that fellas like myself and the bro wouldn't usually do, but, yeah, just chopping it up with everyone, and yeah, bro.
What was the initial reaction, bro? You know what I mean? When it first started, what was the initial community reaction?
Oh, it was awesome. It really was awesome. We had about 20-odd people. Even the police came to our first hui, some of the whānau, the local whānau, some nannies. And it was awesome, bro. We just had a space where we opened up. We talked about some of the harder, deeper things that some of the bros had been suffering with, sexual abuse. Some bros are leaving gangs, some bros were having trouble with relationships, some other brothers were having difficulties with addiction, and it was just mean to be able to have that space to share that with everybody, and, you know, seeing that there's other people in the room that suffer from the same afflictions, and not feeling such a, you know, so alone with them, eh, bro?
My passion is pretty much my family, bro. My family and my friends. I lost a lot of that to the gang life and to the, you know, my substance abuse and all my past and everything that went on there. And, you know, one day I just had to take a look at what was going on and realise, you know, this wasn't me, bro. This wasn't me, and I had lost so much and it was affecting me so much that something had to change. So that was the catalyst for me.
What drives me, or I drive me, hey, you know, it takes me to get myself out of bed. No one else is going to make me do that. But I had a few sort of, you can call them epiphanies or sort of large catalysts that happened for me. One was in my time of being incarcerated, you know, and this isn't for everybody, you know, but I picked up the Bible, right? So now you can pick up the Bible and you can read some scriptures and some of it can resonate with you, and you know, some of it can confuse you, but for me, I actually I believed in the sacrifice that Jesus Christ made, and, You know, that's something that I keep for me. That's a tohu I keep for me. That's not something I, you know, preach out to others. But that's a personal thing, a personal journey I went on my haerenga. another one was my my grandfather. Blackie Carr, Wurumu Carr. Him passing, he's always been very pinnacle in my life. He's always been someone I could lean on. And with him passing and telling me to take care of my family, to take care of, you know, my brothers and sisters and, you know, the place we call home, which is Uawa. To be honest, bro, he never got the chance to see me make a decent go at making anything of myself while he was alive. And in his death, I really took it upon myself to give it a good crack. And I wouldn't change it for the world, bro. You know, I'm going to keep doing my mahi.
How do we meet?
way
back.
I think I was at the skate park one day, Gisborne. I think I was at intermediate. And, you know, it's what young kids do when they're out playing, you know, they're not doing what they're meant to be doing. So I walk across the road and this fella's up in a tree with somebody else doing things he shouldn't be doing. And then that led to, from that sort of initial interaction, somehow we ended up at the beach and we were doing commando roles and then someone kicked me in the face, no names. But, bro, we've been pretty tight since we were young. And, I love this fella and I love how far he's come and, you know, to watch the bro grow and, you know, to be alongside him on this journey has been, nothing better than to share this sort of journey with somebody, you know, you really trust and care.
Yeah, so I was, initially I was brought up by my grandparents. I was taken up the coast and I was sort of wrapped around from my nanny and my papa. My father got out of prison and just a lot of things in the home dynamics started to change, you know what I mean, with his behavior. He was real physical towards me, very physical towards me. It's something that I don't really talk about too much, but yeah, it's really affected me and shaped me into the man I was and all those mistakes I ended up making. So some unsavory things went on in our home, which led to my father being incarcerated for a very long time. And the family that we were living with here in Gisborne, they sort of didn't wrap around us the way we thought they would. You know what I mean? So we ended up moving down to Wellington, getting that wraparound whānau support from my dad's side. And I went to Brandon Intermediate in Porirua. I went to Aotea College and Mana College from there. And I ended up coming back home in 2008 and attending Lytton High School. And things were good there, and then that's when I sort of bumped into the bro, you know, out and about, you know, wandering the streets, wandering the town as teenagers do, eh? And from there, it was I sort of got into the drugs from there, you know, weed, and then gatewayed into methamphetamine later on in the years, which led to a lot of crime being committed from me. I joined the gang, as you can see, and I ended up in prison, bro. So, yeah, that's about from my childhood all the way up to when I was becoming a man.
I can't even remember how many schools I've attended. Very similar to the bro. I come from a real good family, bro. Really, really caring family. It wasn't perfect. But, you know, we had three meals a day sometimes, you know. We had some good role models. We got cuddles and kisses from our aunties and from our nans and from my mum and that. but I never had a father in the picture. That's something that really affected me as a kid. I seen a bit of violence perpetrated at a real young age from old man to my old lady, and you know, that sort of stuff seemed a bit normalised when my grandfather used to beat my nan and stuff like that. So it was sort of generationally ingrained in us that, a woman's job is to be quiet and do her job, you know, which is take care of the kids, feed us and, now it's a man's shot to get on the piss, and you know, if you get too lippy, you get a whack. So yeah, that sort of got ingrained in me at a young age, and you know, being from here, we ended up going to Kurukaupapa Māori, Kohanga, and then we got picked up after my old man went to prison and got moved to Auckland, which was like just a total culture shock, bro. Completely culture shocked. Couldn't speak a lick of English, and now I'm in a mixed school. You know, you got Islander kids, Pākehā kids, Indians, Chinese, you know, half-caste Māoris that sound like Islanders. So, you know, it was different, you know. And so because of that, you know, we did a lot of back and forth traveling, you know. But, yeah, my childhood wasn't too bad. I'd say, you know, there's been a lot of other people with a lot of worse childhoods, but I was always a different type of kid. I'd say that I've always been into scrapping. I've always liked to scrap. So we did primary school there. I think we did a bit of intermediate. And then by the time I got to third form at high school, I'd already been kicked out of high school. I'd probably been kicked out of every other school I ever went to. Just a disruptive kid. Like, I learned quickly, you know. I learned quicker than the other kids, you know. I just muck around all day but still pass every test. And, you know, my attendance was always good. But just young, brother, you know, just always disrupting other kids' learnings and disrupting other people, and yeah, always picking fights and stuff like that. Yeah,
like the bro, I sort of became mischief at a later age though, and I enjoyed the fighting, I enjoyed the partying and the, you know, drugs and alcohol at a young age. So that sort of spurred out of there was street fights, you know, after a night fueled of alcohol and partying, you know. It was quite culturally segregated, you know. Like, we had, me and the bro were just talking about this the other day. Like, he was saying, we had people that played soccer, we had people that rugby, basketball, we had our sports people, but like our Pākehā, our Pālangi whānau, they were always playing the, you know, the soccer here, and they'd hang out together and do the surf lifesaving and stuff like that. And you know, we'd play rugby and basketball, and we'd all hang out together. Then we got the foreign bros, you know, here and there.
Gisborne's composed of two sides of town. You've got a bridge. On this side of town, you've got the blacks. And on that side of town, you've got the mob. And that's sort of how it's been for as long as I can remember. And that's pretty much the geography and the topography of Tūranga Nui Ākua, you know. And if they, yeah, it's not talked about. There's no, like, you stay on your side and we'll stay on our side sort of contract, but it's like, yeah, it's very rife, you know. Yeah, it's a very, very big gang culture in, the East Coast.
So I was affiliated with the Crips, and they started about 15 or 20 years ago here. I was an active member for little over 12 to 13 years. And in that time, I joined when I was 16, and you know, started. That's where the drugs started and the crime. And you know, I went through those fluctuations of jail, you know, and all that loss that comes with it.
Sexual abuse within the whānau is quite rife here. Murder suicide is really high here. It's something that a lot of people, our whānau, don't talk about because we're so isolated from the world. It's easy for whānau to self-regulate. Aunties, uncles, kōrōs, nannies come in and sweep things under the carpet so that, you know, police don't get involved, or rōpūs of self-help don't get involved. And that's just sort of how it works out until someone goes to prison, and then everyone becomes aware of there being a problem, you know. But then by then they're in jail, so they're not our problem. They become corrections problem, you know. And we all know the system there. So, yeah.
Together, how many people do you guys know that have committed suicide?
Are we talking about within the last 6 months, 12 months?
Well,
a year?
That's a good question.
Or our lifetime? Just within the last 9 months, I think we've had about, how many of our bros have been either killed or committed suicide, brother? I think we've been to about 8 tangis just in the last year. And about, been a hard year, brother. Been a very hard year.
Yeah.
Our best mate just washed up on a beach not only 2 months ago. It hasn't even been 2 months. To go collect his body from the... That was hard. Another good mate of ours took his own life down in Christchurch. And yeah, that was hard. I knew the bro since I was about 5 years old. You know, someone told me recently that, you know, no matter how someone goes, that's their time. And, you know, I've come to just settle with that. You know, it's not what you want to hear all the time, but, you know, it gives me a bit of a something. At least it's not nothing. Okay? You know, because we look the way we do, you know, for the general perception of others, it's, you know, oh, yeah, they must be doing that to either help themselves or to help their bros. But we're doing this to uplift all tāne, hey, brother, all men. The things we've struggled with, I can only imagine if I've been through it. Oh, how many other fellas have gone through this and have not known the answers and have ended up doing the thing that, you know, the reason why we've been to so many tongues this year. So, you know, for that reason alone, that's enough reason and catalyst for me to want to try and do better and help others, you know, whether that's by doing it myself and leading by example, or whether that's by opening up a space where brothers can come and have a kōrero and, you know, getting a bit of a holistic approach plus our own whakaros on how to combat those sort of things, yeah.
Did you know anyone that was, like the mahi you guys are doing now growing up, did you know anyone that was doing anything like this?
Hell no!
Nah, not really. Like the bro said, it was just family and friends would just distant themselves, you know what I mean, bro? Like, we wouldn't really get the talking to. Like, you get the odd talking to from your mum. Hey, as mum gives you a telling off, don't do this, don't do that, but we were already at that age where no matter what they said, brother, we were going to do what we want to do, eh, brother? You know, so regardless, we were destined for this path.
Yeah, so I grew up in a little community in Gisborne called Kaiti, which is a one-half suburb of Gisborne. And, they don't fuck around. Hey, you want to fuck around, you'll find out. Hey, that's just the mentality of that place. You know, and it's a place where if you fuck with one person, you're bound to fuck with the whole family because everyone's going to come out. If you like to scrap, you know, all you got to do is pump the fist and you got your scrap. You know, so it was easier to go that way. And I like the colour blue anyway, so. I was patched with the moon car, Tūranga Nui Ākiwa. Yeah, these have never been a decoration for me. This was a declaration of where my heart is, where my tono is. And, I still love my bros. I only hope that one day they too might consider trying to do things differently and trying to give some of this stuff a go and empowering themselves. I know a lot of the bros have displaced in terms of having their tamariki, a home, family dynamic sort of stuff, and I'd only hope the best for them and want that for them too. So I think I joined the Mongoose in 2015 or 14? Might have been 15. Yeah, and I've been with the bros since before that. I was with Black Pearl Hawke's Bay, and then before that I was with the bros with the Crips. Yeah, so I was a Crip before I went to prison. Went to prison and I started fighting fellas you're not meant to fight. I was picking scraps with all the fellas you're not meant to pick scraps with. It sort of got to the point where I graduated. You know, it was like the Crips were like the initial step from Crips was being with the Black Power, being with the Moon Card, you know, and in terms of the ranks and stuff. Or well, from our area, that was the Whakaaro. I went to jail and met some of the bros. They were Meki, brother, straight up Meki ears, bros. They taught me, you know, about jail. They taught me about whakapapa, te reo, heaps of stuff I wouldn't thought I'd be learning in prison. You know, before you went to prison, you know, you always get told, you just go in there and it's stairs and, you know, watch out and you just scrap the biggest you see and, you know, all that. And then, they had their own culture, their own way. And because of some of the crimes I'd committed, it felt like home for me, bro. You know, because before I committed the crimes that I had, I didn't realize that I was capable of such violence. I didn't know that was in me. And then when I went to that place and I was like, you know, I'm in here for this, this, and this, you know, and then I met other fellas like myself, you know, and they promoted that. They were like, no, you're accepted here, bro. You know, don't listen to the court system. Your family might be frowning upon you. Your community might be frowning upon you for the things you've done. But, bro, that's all good. That's gangster. Hey, welcome, brother. Oh, yeah, mean. Yeah, bro, everything goes in here, brother. Pillage, you name it. We're into it. Oh, okay, so you learn to upskill from there. You know, you start engraving all these, the people call them heinous or vicious or whatever the fuck they call it. You know, I like to think they were just like honing those skills there. You know, if that's the type of person we're, life we're living now, you know, this is the choice we've made. Okay, so it was dead set. You know, there was no talk about trying to be better or you can turn your life around. Hey, everybody was like, this is the path we're on now.
So my first term of imprisonment was, I was the age of 18, no, 19. Those initial months, they were tough. They were real tough because I was still young. I was still dumb. You know what I mean? I was still impulsive as ever, as teenagers are. And yeah, bro, I just I come across, you know, types of fellas that I looked at and I thought, man, these fellas are not only surviving, but they're thriving in this. You know, and one of the main ones was the brother right here, you know, once again, you know, and I just learned, hey, I watched, learned, and I adapted. And then, like the bro said, I upskilled. You know what I mean? So I didn't go as deep as the bro, but you know, I went deep enough to become institutionalized, to become, you know, prone to violence, and you know what I mean, and become numb to all the pain and mamai that I'm dishing out to everyone around me, and the effects it's having on my whānau, bro. Yeah, it broke my mum's heart. You know, I'm the baby of the family, so for a mother to see her pepe go down that road and, you know, lose himself that much and, you know, go so far to what she thought was, you know, the point of no return, it really hurt my mum, you know, to the point where, you know, today my mum's, she has health issues, you know, that I won't mention, but sometimes I think back and I'm like, if I didn't stress her out all those years, maybe, you know, maybe, just maybe she wouldn't have, you know, been going through what she's going through today. I lost any relationship I ever had. I couldn't hold down a relationship. You know what I mean? All I seen was, oh, I'm in here with the bros, you know, time to just get down with the gang, eh? You know, so, yeah, it's quite hard. It was quite hard, bro. You know, especially when it come to my babies, you know, being ripped away from my daughter at the time and watching another man, or not watching, hearing of another man, bringing up my daughter and knowing I can't do anything about it and then make things worse. I know this fella at the same time too, eh? But, you know, that's how the game goes. Bro, I reflect and I'm just like, I'm quite flabbergasted, eh, bro? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what to think sometimes, brother. You know, it's still an overwhelming feeling for me. Still quite, it's anxious feeling, but it's happy, bro. You know what I mean? It's awesome, to be honest. You know, just to have my bro here, to have my whānau intact, to have the trust of my family, to be, you know, out there getting amongst our community and, you know, running our class and being accepted from people we never thought we'd be accepted by, bro, is f***ing awesome.
I'm naturally a deep thinker. I've always been an overthinker. My sort of thing now is because I know how easily I can be triggered. I have so many triggers now because of the mentality and the lifestyle that I used to have. I had a lot of people try and give me good advice over the years. But I just had this mentality of just fucking, you know, the world owed me something, burn everything, kill everyone, you know, and I was just real numb like that for a long time, bro. I wouldn't say I was evil, but it was just like a really dark place to be in, and I promoted it a lot. I don't like to think about negative things like that. I don't even really like to talk about negative things now because I know how strong that energy is. I know how true the devil's motives are and how easily I can be reinfested again. So I'd probably say I'm blessed, bro. I'm blessed to have that knowledge, that self-awareness about myself. So when I do have reflection, it comes from a good place, you know, and I try and focus on those sort of things. I'm not perfect, bro. I still got a lot of ticks, a lot of things that I need to work out, but at least for myself and people that know me, bro, I'm just honest.
Well, can you still touch on how long you had spent in prison?
Yeah, all up around just under 15 years, bro. Had some hard times, brother. I just got out in August of last year, and I spent the last probably about four years up in Perry, and that was hard, bro. That was hard. I was going through a lot of family court stuff, and I was being really mischief at the time. Within that confine, they've got a supermax, which is just 3-tier landings. Yeah, it holds its own, bro. It's got a reputation.
What's it like going in there, say, for some guy that's not gang affiliated or anything like that? How's it like stepping in there?
Yeah, he's brother. I could only probably imagine it's quite daunting, you know. Yeah, if you love being set up, bro, yeah, go pay it a visit. Yeah, that's all I can say. It's different from the other prisons. It holds its own wairua. You know, there's a lot of fellas in there that think they're big and bad, but there's always going to be someone bigger and better, and 10 to 1 you'll find them there. Yeah, because I had so much anger in me, so much unforgiveness, so much hate in my heart. A lot of the time, you know, I was getting out and I was taking that out on the community, but it also came inwards, so I was affecting my family. And then all of a sudden, I think someone told me it was a spiritual warfare, bro. And I started hearing voices and yeah. And then I started convincing myself that it was the screws. So I started attacking screws all the time. And then when it wasn't the screws, it must be the inmates. So I started attacking the inmates. And everywhere I went, I just always had these things I kept hearing. And I didn't know why I was hearing them. And they f***ed me up, bro. It's real. Yeah, straight up. I don't care who you are or, you know, what your opinion is. I've never heard that in my life. I've never been through anything like that. And I'd obviously done something to piss someone off, or I invited something into my mind or into my body. And it manifested and became something I couldn't fight with these anymore, something I couldn't hit back physically. And I didn't know how to fight it, and it started consuming me. To make things worse, I started getting into satanic rituals and reading the satanic Bible because I thought, oh, it, you know, I may as well embrace whatever this is. So I started trying to connect with it. And oh, no, that didn't help. That just intensified it, and it super bashed me. So then when I was up in Perry, I ended up down in what they call the supermax unit, the pound. And there were a couple of brothers down there, and they talked to me about it one night. And, you know, there's other brothers, they come, they try and offer each other, you know, so we're all striving to, you know, maintain and, you know, stay in our lanes. You know, some brothers come to me with the Quran, you know, some brothers come to me with the Mormon religion, but these two good bros, love these bros, they talk to me about Jesus Christ and Christianity, and bro, I don't know what it was, but the bro said to me, he goes, brother, check this out, brother. You open up that book and watch everyone around us start acting out of it, bro. And watch everything just start being f***ing out of it, bro. Every time you try and do something good for yourself, bro, some f***ed up shit will start happening around you. And I was thinking, these f***ing loony cats, you know? But no f***ing shit, bro. I go and pick the f***ing Bible. No shit, brother. Cats are making like cat noises, cow noises on the doors, eh? And it was every time I tried to do like some spiritual healing shit, bro. And I was like, hey, what the fuck's going on here? There's some bit of a truth going on here. Channels would change themselves, you know. And every time I started getting myself on a straight path, or you know, I stopped playing into some of the politic games and, you know, just started trying to do my leg, bro. And especially when the Bible come into it, it's like, yeah, I don't know, brother. Yeah. something spooky. But anyway, I missed out on such a big chunk of my life. I wanted to have a little bit of fun. I missed out on the Christmas and the birthdays and the New Year's. Oh, I want to have some fun. But then, you know, I still had probation and parole and stuff, so I still was self-conscious about, you know, if I do these shit, it's going to lead to the, all those fuck-ups. It's probably going to lead back to prison. So I was really juggling, you know, my commitment to what I was going to do. And, yeah, but done it. Hey, done it. Yeah.
What would you say was one of the first big steps you took now to where you are now?
For me, brother, was giving up the crack. Meth, or P, has always been a fucking hard struggle for me, bro. I've always loved smoking crack. I've always liked the lifestyle of smoking crack, stand over, handovers. You know, I've never really given a fuck. I haven't really had things to give a fuck about. I thought it was fun. Having a home, bro. Yeah, having somewhere I could actually call my own home, you know. It's a lot of, yeah, a lot of shell shocking things, even just getting my own toilet paper, buying my own food, yeah, getting the gas, driving the car on the motorway. That was pretty daunting. Yeah, so a lot of different experiences, a lot of, empowering experiences that I, took in my stride and, yeah, just found the positive in them eventually, yeah.
Once I got into gang activity and joined up and, you know, started robbing, reeling, dealing and stealing, that's where my drug use began, because I couldn't pay for it, you know, so that's when I started stealing for it, you know, so eventually it took a hold of me, as that drug does, bro. It ripped everything away from me, brother. It made me a shell of a man, to the point where I didn't even recognize myself, you know, so, yeah, bro, meth has played a huge part, not only in my journey, but my reasoning behind the blessings I've caught so far. I've been clean, what's this month, September, 1 year and 9 months, I've been clean, bro, and I've just given up the green this year too, so I'm about 8 or 9 or so months clean off that too. So first time in about 15 years that I've been completely drug free, ever since I was a teenager and, you know, joined the gang and started doing all those unsavory antics. Eh?
I want to say, bro, like in all my years in jail, I was never deemed worthy to do any courses, any anger management courses, any drug rehabilitative courses, any violence preventative courses, any sort of rehabilitation. So yeah, let that be a testament to anybody that's struggling with, you know, inadequacy or feeling like they're ready to make that step or whether they're worthy or not. Because I'm living proof of somebody that, you know, literally had never ever and would never even give or consider doing something like that. So after my grandfather died, and like I said, my brother being a chairman of our local marae, and that not happening, that ended up being around early November. I'd only just gotten out in September the 1st, so I'd literally just been out for 2 months. Real nervous, bro. Real nervous, like police there, you know, you've got someone that's from the Iwi Trust Panel for judges and, you know, people that are judging you on, you know, not only your appearance, but your credibility and, like, you know, what you know. But I had some people that had encouraged me and said, bro, your story, you're qualified by experience. The things that you know, you can't learn in any classroom. And I was telling them, nah, like, I'm not the guy for this. Like, I honestly don't know what I'm talking about. And they're like, you'll be surprised, bro. And I actually did really surprise myself. And it came by... Not
my peers telling me, you know, that I was doing a good job, but by other people telling me, bro, I don't want to kill myself today now because of something you said. I'm like, bro, thank you for, you know, helping me navigate through that. Bro, I'm going to go back to work and I'm going to try and get my kids back. And, you know, and I've crossed paths with them maybe a month or two later and they're like, brother, meet my son. You know, oh, what are you up to, brother? Oh, just that mahi, my bro. You know, the things they told me they were going to do. And I was like, oh, mean the brothers. Yeah.
Bro, can you sort of talk about how you come up with the name of it and what it means?
Oh, simple as, brother. Simple as follows. So simple as concept. Ho'ora means well-being. And 35 is the name of the highway that we all live on or where we're from. State Highway 35, North Pura East Coast. And yeah, so we just went Ho'ora 35 and just put them together. Well-being for our iwi. Yeah, our plans are just keep rocking shoulders with fellas like yourself, other leaders, other rangatira, upskill, learn more tools, but carry on the trajectory and the narrative that they're running with. I know we haven't got it into a lot of detail of some of the crimes and a lot of the stuff we went through in prison and stuff like that, but yeah, we want to just keep doing what we're doing now, and we see the fruit and the labor. You know, we're starting to grow leaders in our community, we're starting to uplift ourselves.
Well, the life is good, life is real good. Just having everything intact for once, you know what I mean, like going back to earlier, not only the love but the trust of your family, your peers, community, etc. For myself, I have a passion on the side, which is basketball. So I've been able to go into the league this year and showcase my talent, connect with the rangatahi, with other men, you know, around this town who wouldn't normally get the chance to, you know, rub shoulders and speak words with fellas like I say. You know, so that's quite fulfilling for me. You know, that's my release, that's my healing, and that's my, you know, my bit of everything on the side. But yeah, bro, all in all, I'm loving life at the moment, and I'm happy for once.
I finally dealt with some things that, you know, that I never thought I'd ever talk about, from, you know, my own experiences with sexual abuse and, you know, my own inadequacies and insecurities and stuff to do with not being able to forgive others and stuff like that. No, those are only ever dreams, bro. To be self-employed, you know, to have my own mana back. Yeah, those are things that I never thought that I would ever get to. And I can honestly say, bro, I actually like who I am now. You know, I actually love the man that I'm becoming now. I actually love me, you know. For a long time, I was always mongi ge, teeth and neck. And now, you know, I hated Regan. I didn't like who Regan was. You know, Regan wasn't a good person. Regan wasn't someone I wanted to know. But now, bro, I like me, bro. I can look in the mirror now without seeing shards of the demon staring back at me, you know. And now I get greeted by strangers and people. And, bro, I never had that. I never had that sort of stuff, bro. I was always the cunt of the unit or the cunt of the wing or the cunt of the street, you know. People closed doors when I used to drive down the road. And my brothers, my sisters, my whānau, you are loved. You are loved. You can love yourself. Sounds corny as f***, but you can love yourself again. You can be forgiven and you can forgive. You know? It may not seem like it right now. You know, the people you might be around may not be the people for you. You may not be getting the answers, or you may not even be challenging yourself with, you know, you may be acceptant of where you are right now, but that's just right now. You know, to anybody that's out there, that want some help, that's needing answers, that wants to challenge themselves with questioning whether they're, you know, right inside. I actually really challenge you to go out there and find the answers, because for me, things are only getting worse within our family dynamics and within our iwis, within our country. And the more you educate yourself and empower yourself with the knowledge of how to conduct yourself, how to be a better father, how to be present, you know, how to control your anger, timing, breathing, the better everyone's going to be for it. But it starts with ourselves. So these t-shirts that we're wearing now say safe man, safe family. And the concept around that is, if you are a safe man, you have a safe family. Okay? But it starts with yourself, getting yourself right. So you can be a better father, better partner, and better man altogether. You know, once upon a time, in this country, wearing a patch was called a korowai. And a korowai is something given to a chief, a leader. And, you know, that's something I really want people to actually think about, you know, our brothers and sisters out there. Think about what it means to be a chief. Think about your tīpuna. Think about what's good for you. Think about what's good for your family going forward. Not just now, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years from now. You know, to everybody out there, to the world, really challenge yourself. Are you doing the best for longevity? Or are you doing the best for you? Try really focusing on what's the best for your children. You might get a bit of pocket money now, but is that going to be, is that autonomy? Do you know, do you have that safety? Is that always going to be there? If something fucks up, is that still going to be there? Are you still going to be there? Is someone going to be there for your tamariki, for your children, for your whānau, if something ever were to happen to you? Because we're here today, gone tomorrow. So think about that, whānau.
Whānau, no matter how far backwards you've gone, how much you think you've lost yourself, there's always a way back, not only to you, but to your whānau, to well-being, to being a healthy, productive member of society and functioning correctly. You know what I mean? If fellas like me and the bro can do it, then absolutely anyone can do it. And that's our reasoning for jumping on this platform, whānau, is we just want to show, regardless of what we've been through, regardless of how we're feeling or how we've felt, we're here, we're doing it. You know what I mean? A lot of whānau, tāne, wāhine and tamariki out there suffering, especially the kids, you know, they're paying the price for their parents' actions.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we come from that life where our kids have paid the most for our actions.
You know,
still are to this day, eh, bro?
You know what really sucks, bro? Is that every bro you meet, every brother you meet, fuck, all the bros have some mecha knowledge, and some form. All the bros are on, but all the bros don't have a voice. All the bros are unsure of themselves. All the bros don't know if they deserve better of themselves. And it's, bro, we've got so many leaders, but just not much leadership, brother? And it's like, come on, brothers, like, we're trying to boost the bros up, like, even us stepping into this sort of world. This ain't a world we're used to, but ain't no one was doing it. Hey, I didn't recognize none of these fellas with their suits on and their pointy snake shoes, and they're coming in, and I'm like, bro, you ever smoke crack? They're like, nah, ever been. And they're like, nah, bro, I don't fucking connect with you. We need more brothers like us, more brothers like that, bro. And more fellas that we connect with. That's why, you know, we watch the bros podcast, because we're just like, check this fella out. Nice though, bro. Our bro's gonna mean story. I can resonate with the bro. That's massive. But we're not seeing it in our communities, eh? We're just not seeing it out there, and it's there though, but it's like down there, or it's way over there, and it's like, but I see the bros every day, you know, bros driving past and shit. I'm like, the bro would be Mickey for this. Oh, that bro's good at this, that bro's good at this, but utilizing that skill, you know, to uplift our iwi, uplift our whānau, it'll be mean. But
yeah, not everyone's on the same kaupapa, not everybody's at the same level. But yeah, that's our hope anyway.